Welcome to Business Beyond Borders, the go-to podcast for CPA firms seeking transformative insights. I'm your host, Lawrence Whittam, and with each episode, we'll uncover key insights, best practices, and invaluable resources tailored for CPAs. From trending strategies to diving deep into outsourcing and offshoring, our experts will help in all areas of your business.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Business Beyond Borders. I'm here with Bhavesh Agarwal from Windy Street today. So I appreciate you jumping on, Bhavesh, and we're going to have a good discussion about outsourcing and going over some challenges, best practices, and learning a little bit about yourself and the company, because I know you work with a number of firms here in the US. So how are you doing, Bhavesh?
Very well, Lawrence. Thank you so much for having me over. Hello, everyone.
So can you start off, give a little bit of an introduction about yourself, about your company, and just some overall background so everyone knows who they're listening to.
Yeah. So, hi, everyone. My name is Bhavesh Agarwal. I am the founder of Windy Street. I am a chartered accountant by profession, which is CPA equivalent in India. I have been associated with EY for about 13 years prior to starting Windy Street. And my most recent experience with EY was as a senior manager in the Atlanta office. I was also responsible for their outsourcing function for the central US region. So that is where I learned a lot about outsourcing. And then 3 years back, we started Windy Street. At Windy Street, we have over 20 teams that operate for clients. We work with about 10 CPA firms in the US. And we have about 120 people. Those people are based in 4 cities in India. We are headquartered in New Delhi, which is the capital city of India. And we have employees in Ahmedabad, Bangalore, and Mumbai. We are a full service outsourcing firm, which means that we provide services across various service lines, be it audit, client accounting services, or commonly referred to as CAS. We do financial diligence, we do valuation, and then we do tax. We are a SOC 2 Type 2 certified company. And more importantly, our IT function is designed, managed, and implemented by EY. So they take care of all the IT on our side. We take a lot of pride in the quality of work that we do for our clients, and the culture and the experience that we provide to our team members here.
And again, what I would say is one of the newer kids on the block to some extent from the outsourcing side, but comes with a lot of experience, especially coming from EY for the past 13 years. And also just, again, talking to you, you having that experience and really helping them grow out their back office, right, over those years. So, and again, and now, like you said, with the IT side of it, even still taking it at the EY quality level, really, from that perspective and bringing it from the top level and implementing it into your new business, right? Which again, is very important and helps firms, especially just that comfort factor, right? And that level of comfort when they're growing a team. So now, can you, as you're quite new, I mean, that's, and again, you've grown to about 120 people, you mentioned now. Right. Yeah. So what have you learned as even a new leader, right? As your owning the firm and growing it, what have you had to learn and change quite quickly just as a leader to create sort of a good culture within the firm, make sure you're attracting and retaining talent? Because again, that's something that firm owners here struggle with, right? So we would love to know a little bit about that.
Sure. There has been tremendous learning for me personally as well, Lawrence, and it has been a great experience for me personally doing this for the last 3 years. In terms of what we do, is everything is people focused. I'll give you an example where we do 2 offsites in a year. One is a summer offsite and one is a winter offsite. Now, the fact that we have 2 offsites in a year was not decided by me. It was decided by the team members. Where we go on offsite is decided by the team members. So a lot of the decisions that we do at Windy Street are based on polls that we do. And based on the employee polls, ultimately, sometimes we realize that what we are thinking is not what they are thinking. So a lot of things that we do at Windy Street is based on what people want, We operate on a hybrid work environment wherein people work from home. And we have noticed that productivity is higher when they're working from home. Commutes in India tend to be significant. Like it could be 2 hours one way. And, you know, if you're 2 hours one way, it means you're spending 20 hours on the road. So we don't require everybody to be in the office. Our IT systems are fully secure. So there is no need to be in the office as well. So we do a lot of things from the employee perspective. And in the last 3 years, our attrition at a gross level has been about 10%, which is 20 to 25% at the industry standard level. And we've been able to maintain 10 on a gross level, single digit on a net level. So our focus on people has paid off. We also do, a firm like us is small, but we do people surveys for the last 3 years. And based on the people surveys, we actually do showcase the results of the people surveys on the monthly town halls that we have. So every Monday, last Friday of every month, we have a town hall where we provide updates to people on what has happened in the company in the last 1 month. And as part of those town halls, we provide them the updates. So these are the survey questions. This is where we scored the lowest. And then we work on those survey questions. And then next year, we try to improve. I mean, I personally talked to all of the 100 plus 120 team members. Last time we had 100 when we did the performance reviews. But I spent time with all 100 people during the performance reviews. And it takes 10 days for me to do that. But I do spend the time because what I learned from them, I can't learn from just talking to the managers or the senior managers.
Yeah, and it's and again, it's interesting you saying that 100 people, because it's it is something that I, one of the prior episodes with I believe it was Joey Havens, and he specifically said, like, it's, again, he sat down with as they were growing with the majority of team members, right, very as regularly as they possibly could. And again, it gets more and more difficult as the team size grows, but he would specifically take time to talk one-on-one because it would show the investment that he was making and he could actually listen to the issues, right? And he knew that they were doing stuff for the people then rather than making decisions themselves or the leadership side where maybe they were disengaged at certain points and it wasn't something that was best for everybody, right? So you do have to listen. And again, it's great that you're implementing those types of features, and it's something that firms can do quite early on as well, especially with town halls. It creates a lot of transparency right through across the business. We make sure that our why as a business everybody understands and is on board with. So that's awesome. Now, when we are talking about, well, you mentioned it, right? So I gotta ask. When I like to ask somewhat of a cultural question as well. So, and you mentioned about the traffic, and I've been over there multiple times to different areas. And again, it's I've taken many rickshaws. I've even sat on the back of motorbikes, which at that stage I wouldn't have wanted to tell my parents I did, right? Which was 10 years ago, but I did, and we did that. Those types of experiences. Can you tell them? Let's say not now, because I think they actually use traffic lights now, which previously they didn't use traffic lights. When I went over the first time, there was no traffic lights. They were there, but they were not a thing, right? It was so it was just beeping and just making sure that, okay, we're not going to get a crash. Let's push across this junction, right? And not a small junction, like a four-lane junction. But tell us, like, again, can you give everybody some insight into, like, the traffic and what it's like over there now and things like that, just from the cultural side? I would love to know that.
Yeah, no, the traffic, I will be honest with you, is not very great. I mean, the traffic is poor. I don't live at a very, you know, long distance from the office. I'm about, 6 miles from the office, and it takes me about 30 minutes in the morning. By the time I leave the office, it's pretty late, so I reach home in about 15 minutes. But so I'm one of the lucky ones, to be honest with you. But some team members live further away, and some team members take the train, the metro. So that way, it is not too bad for them. But yes, traffic is not something that we are proud of as a country. But it is what it is.
Now, are you a motorbike guy or a scooter guy, or do you have a car or?
No, I have a car. So I recently got a Skoda car. So I have a car. And then most of the people in the office, you know, they drive to office or they take the train. And some people use Uber and Ola, the Indian version of Uber.
Yep.
So there, you know, most of the people, I would say, commute by either cab or by car. I would say very few people, if maybe less than 5% of the people in our office use motorbikes right now.
And now, last question on the on the car side of things. So you drive a car. Do you use both wind mirrors, or do you have them pushed in?
No, I do use both wind mirrors. Yeah, okay. Those are important for me. I can't drive without them.
Okay. So, and just in case somebody hears that, right? Obviously, you've got to talk politically, but it's so it's funny because, again, when I was over there, like a lot of people, obviously, with the wind mirrors, they're such a big thing over here. But because the traffic, again, they're not necessarily using all four lanes, there'll be six cars in those four lanes in some cases. So then they'll push in their wind mirrors and stuff. And it was just, again, funny. So I have to ask, but you gave the correct answer, right?
Yes. No, India is doing a lot on capital infrastructure, and over the last 5 years, the amount of roads that have been constructed in India is significant. So the government is doing a good job on that. The capex spend in the recent budget announced by the government has also gone up. So when you come to India, I mean, you travel pretty frequently, Lawrence, but if you come after 5 or 10 years, you'll see a different India.
Yeah. No, I mean, I see every year I go, it's completely changed, I feel like. So, okay, now we'll get back to the fun stuff, the outsourcing stuff. But so can you tell us, let's say when you're starting with firms, right? When firms are first starting and getting moving, like what can you give us an example of what they should be considering internally as a business, as a firm first, before they even jump into the outsourcing side of things? What should they be thinking about?
Yeah, I mean, see, when CPA firms are considering outsourcing, what they need to first think is what is their ultimately, what is their goal when they're trying to outsource? Is their goal that they just want to get access to talent because there is a lot of talent shortage, like we all know about? Is their goal just cost arbitrage? Or is their goal to have a team that can ultimately scale their business? Because if their goal is a team that can ultimately scale their business, they have more people who can do high quality work, and then they are able to add clients. The US team members are able to push down a lot of work that they would have to rather do otherwise, and then serve more clients. So instead of doing, you know, I'm just making this up, 20 clients, they can do maybe 50 clients now. So it is not only about the cost leverage, you know, when we talk about outsourcing, it is also the top line growth, because it enables the firm to do more business and make them more competitive in the marketplace as well, which is the cost side again. But it is only not cost arbitrage, to be honest with you. It is both top line and bottom line. So that is something that they've got to, you know, evaluate. What are they considering? And once they have evaluated that part, they need to understand which model, in what is the model in which they want to outsource. When I say model, there are three models that are prevalent in the outsourcing industry. And you can see one is a dedicated team model, where you work with the same team members, you have a dedicated team that works exclusively for you. The second model is, okay, you know what, I have the 4-15 busy season, the 9-15, 10-15 busy season. So I want support only for the busy season, or I want support for the audit busy season, the employee benefit plans. So do you want support only for the busy seasons, or when it comes to financial diligence or valuation, do you want support only for specific projects? So either project basis support or busy season support. The third type of outsourcing, which we don't do and we don't recommend to do as well, is ad hoc work. You have a partnership with a vendor or an outsourcing partner, you know, as and when you need some help, you send it their way, you know, otherwise you don't regularly invest in the partner or talk to the partner. So that type of support we don't do. And we primarily focus on the dedicated team model, where you have the same team for the long run, because that is how you operate onshore as well. So it should be no different when you do a outsourcing. So I think to summarize, first, identifying the goal, what you're trying to achieve. And then second, deciding on the model would be, you know, the most important things that CPA firms need to have clarity on.
Yeah, and I would agree, even from your just preference over it as well. Like when the ad hoc side of things is okay for testing the waters to some extent, right? And to get a rough baseline idea. And again, you get projects that come up, right? Like a cleanup project, a new client that you've got to do a few years. And again, it's good to be able to pass a lot of that on. However, it's very difficult for an outsourcing firm to maintain a process, right? That if you're only doing work with them once a year, it's very difficult to create consistency for that, right? I mean, even if it's the same person that worked on it the last year, they're still going to have to revisit and retrain to some extent, right? Unless they've done it year on year on year on year, right? I mean, it's quite difficult. So I used to say as well, to say very similar in terms of, even if you're doing like seasonal type work and you've got an increase, you maybe need 3 or 4 people during the season. Can you keep one of those team members on board though year round, right? Because now that person gets used to your process. They build it as part of your team. They can help you scale up then during the seasons a little bit, but you also keep that knowledge in the outsourcing firm and keep it more prevalent and doing it properly, like year round. Like it just helps, right? And there's a bit of a control process then coming into the seasonal work. So I completely agree with you, and that's a great sort of point to bring up. Now, so what do the first few months? So they've put their goals down as a team. Okay, they've chosen their model. Now what does the first couple of 2-3 months look like, and what should they expect during those 2 or 3 months?
So during the first few months, once they've chosen the model, the first thing that the USCP firm should do is identify one person, ideally a senior manager, or maybe a group of 2 to 3 people at the most, who would be the flag bearers of outsourcing at their firm. They would be what we can call a spork or a champion.
Yep.
Those people are responsible to say, okay, you know what, we will lead the initiative for outsourcing. Put it as part of their KRAs, you know, their performance goals. And those people will be responsible for driving the initiative at the CPA firm. A lot of people will have a lot of questions on, you know, various things. And if there are people who can educate them about it, then those people will be very helpful. So that smoothens the process a lot. So once you do this, you have the goal identified, you choose your model, then you choose, you know, let's say the champion. And once that is done, the first few months will be, you know, at least in our experience, what happens is the team onboarding takes place. There is a lot of client-specific training in terms of, you know, there is some data security training that the clients want us to do, which is employee onboarding. There is a lot of software training because some clients use different softwares. So there is some software training. And then there is a lot of learning in terms of each other's processes, how things work. Okay, this went well, this didn't go well. In terms of what the leaders or the partners can expect is a lot of communication. They should spend, you know, the first 2-3 months, they have to spend more time than they would have to spend later on. In terms of communicating how things are going, we generally have once in a week call with the partners who are responsible for offshoring on how things are going. And in my experience, to be honest with you, Lawrence, we have seen a lot of surprises in the first couple of months where the US team members are like, oh, if this is what we are going to get back, why don't we send more work to India? So that is what we've seen in most of the cases.
Right. I mean, And it's important to remember that it's somewhat of a courting first few months, right? I mean, it's if you think about it, when you bring in on a team member internally as well, like you want to make sure that you're showing a good culture within the firm. You want to retain that talent as well. And again, sometimes they're not a fit for the culture at the end of the day, but typically, hopefully you've done a good enough job from the recruitment side and putting together like the role responsibilities and doing the interviews as the firm to make sure that, okay, yeah, this person has the skill set, right? But now it should be more of, okay, I mean, let's look at the culture in the firm. Let's make sure they've got the right training in place. Find out where the gaps are. Gaps are that you actually need to work on at the end of the day. Not necessarily, hey, listen, I need these projects done. I need these projects done. This is the deadline for them. Because again, I mean, as soon as you start that straight away, I mean, that's not really creating a great environment for somebody in a lot of cases. So I like how you sort of said it's more of the training side, and it's more of the, again, in those first few months, you've got to remember, I mean, it takes a few months to get people three, six, sometimes a full year to get some people up to speed, right? As to, and again, people just take different time. People take, need it in a different model, right? In terms of like, some people need visual learning. Some people need more practical learning and actually doing it and things like that. So you got to adjust accordingly, right? So now, so what about, can you give a couple of challenges that you've seen? And again, you guys are reasonably new. So in terms of, you've been doing it for 3 years now, I'm sure you've been through a few challenges yourselves with firms, right? And let's say maybe give a challenge that you faced, right, as the outsourcing firm, where you guys had to maybe change something. And then on the flip side, what you've seen that a firm has had to change in order to make it work.
Sure. So I'll give you one challenge that we had on a financial diligence client. And this is like a positive challenge, to be honest with you. But the challenge was that we do something called data books on financial diligence, which is like an Excel workbook. So the general trend in the industry is that, you know, you can send data books to India and it will get done. And our team members were not expecting to do only data books. They could do the entire diligence project from India. And there is a term called integration percentage. Different firms use this term, which is basically the amount of time that can be done from India versus the total amount of time it takes on a project. So in financial diligence, we can do easily, you know, above 50% integration, means more than half of the project can be done from India. And the client was not expecting that we could do that. So the client came over to India in April of 2022, I think. And we, you know, he was there in our office for a week, and then we discussed everything. And then we told them that the team members expect to do more work. So he's like, oh, that's fine with me. I'm more than happy to send it. And then he sent the work to India. The team attended client calls. They wrote the report. And on one of the deals, I think we did like 75, 80% of the work from India, which benefited the client a lot. And they are coming back. Another partner from the same firm is coming back in March and April of this year because they want to make it an annual visit to the Windy Street office to learn more. Awesome. And more, integrate more, build more rapport. And then our team members go to the US very often to develop rapport with the client. As we speak, we have two team members on the audit side who are at a client location for, you know, a few weeks. And then we have a few team members go for the tax busy season as well. Now, these are not long-term rotations, but just, you know, a couple of weeks and so on, just to understand. Some of them are slightly long-term, depends on the visa category. So some of them are more long-term and they do the busy season from there. Once they have done one busy season from there, it gives them tremendous experience of how it is to be in the US during a busy season. What are the problems the US team is facing? What is client communication like? So when they come back to India, you know, they are able to do much, much better than they were able to do previously. And in terms of the first few months, just coming back to the question for 1 second, Lawrence, what happens is, you know, if you hire only junior level people, it will take time. It will take more time to scale up. What we do as a firm is we hire a lot of senior talent, people at manager level, people at senior manager level. What happens is these guys have 8, 10, 5, 7 years of experience in the offshoring space, and they've worked with other firms as well. So that way, the learning curve does not take, you know, a lot of time because these team members are good. They've already done so many firms. So that way, the learning curve and, you know, the processes and all that does not take more than 2 to 3 months, I would say.
Okay. And now, so what's one of those challenges? Like, and again, I heard somewhat misexpectations. And again, in this case, it was somewhat of a, they had lower expectations that you were actually capable of. I've seen the reverse quite often as well, right? Obviously, but now what's one of the challenges that the firm typically faces? Like when they are outsourcing that you've clearly seen like, yeah, we've got to overcome this a little bit internally with them, whether it's mindset, whether it's process, what is that?
The biggest challenge in outsourcing that we have faced, and I can say with almost certainty that every other CPA firm and outsourcing firm will face, is communication breakage. Communication is the biggest hurdle because what happens is if you don't over-communicate, in outsourcing, you should always over-communicate because the team members, when they're doing their work, they don't have access to the US people because it's, you know, the opposite time of the day. Same with the US team members. They don't have access to the India team members. And we do enforce that there is about 3 to 4 hours of overlap time. And I'll talk more about this. But communication is the biggest challenge. Now, if you fix the communication problem, then the challenges with respect to outsourcing will reduce drastically. So every firm that is looking to outsource should, you know, make a protocol. Okay, these are the ways in which you will communicate to the India team, whether it is on a daily basis, how do you communicate on a weekly basis, what are the processes on a monthly basis, on an annual basis. So those kind of things in communication, whether it is oral communication, do you send an MIS to them for what happened last month? Do you have daily check-in calls? Do you have weekly check-in calls with the manager? Monthly check-in calls with the leadership? So those kind of protocols need to be established. Otherwise, without communication, there could be frustration on both sides, not knowing what the other team members are thinking on the other side of the world.
Yeah, and I believe firms have started to understand that more now, that especially during COVID and those times when now they started hiring remote talent, even domestically, a lot more. So it's, they've had to put processes into place because they found that there were those communication problems even internally. Now, the difference is when your team is together and in an office and again, collaborating, and you get to know each other, you build relationships, you know how to communicate with each other a lot quicker and a lot easier than when you've never met them in person, right? For example. So again, that's where it becomes a bit difficult, because again, there's a lot of people that were in the office, they went virtual, and if they didn't hire anybody new necessarily virtually, then they haven't really learned too much because they already had the relationships and they maybe had to overcome certain things, but they knew how to reach out to each other. They were comfortable reaching out to each other. But when it's completely virtual, and this is where the addition of having firms travel more to meet their team members is so important, right? However, if you're not right now, and there's a generally a good portion of time where you don't get to meet them straight away, you need to be spending a bit of extra time with that communication aspect, spending more time focusing on what's the plan, what's the protocol to do it, but also have those conversations and get to know one another personally so that you can actually understand, like, what is it that makes this person go? What is it that makes them tick in the right direction, that where they'll understand what I'm saying? Is it, did I need to summarize a message for them after the call? Do I need to be on the call so they can ask me questions, right? Do I need to entice questions from them, or will they happily give me a bunch of questions? Again, people are different. Right. So hugely important. Now, you shared a few best practices within that communication, which was great. But can you share maybe one of a best practice when it comes to outsourcing that a firm should focus on outside of the communication line?
Sure. So outside of the communication line, a few, you know, best practice that they should focus on outside of communication is, you know, let's say in terms of the feedback process. The feedback process is very important. Now, some firms would do feedback after the busy season. Some would do after, you know, let's say after each return is completed. So the feedback process is super important, because some firms want to give feedback right then and there. And actually, it does not depend by firm, to be honest with you. It depends by each individual as well. So to understand what the feedback process will be is super important, because sometimes a US team member might feel frustrated that, oh, I'm not getting the same quality of work that I'm expecting, but the India team member does not even know. So, and it could go the reverse way as well, that the India team member is not getting the right instructions from the US team, but they've never told the US team member. So they have to communicate that, hey, I'm not understanding very clearly what you're saying over here. So the feedback process is super important in terms of best practices, and it depends on every client, Lawrence. So we don't do, you know, one size fit all solution. Our feedback process, our communication protocols differ for every single client that we have. And that is, you know, one of the differentiators we have as well. But feedback process, to answer your question, is one of the most important best practices that you got to figure out after the communication channels.
Yeah, and I would say, just again from experience, it's feedback, especially with firms that start because they need to start, right? So when it's tax season's coming up, I've got to pull the trigger, I got to get going now, and they don't listen. In terms of sometimes it's like, just give yourself, like, start in November, right? And then you've got a few months to get used to the people and get used to the process. But again, they want to start in January. Okay, fine. All right, they start in January. But now, like you said, I mean, they then get too busy to give the feedback, right? Which you never, now you're going to go through the busiest time when you really need them, right? And if you don't provide good feedback in the first few returns and stuff like that, like, you can't expect them to get better and the next returns to come back any different, right? At the end of the day, just to be very real, right? And I've been in so many situations where they, again, they don't necessarily like the confrontation, so they don't want to discuss that. And it's, but that's partly where the offshore and in outsourcing firms from the BPO side come in, right? Being able to, Bhavesh, you're not working on that project, right? You can go and help communicate. You can talk to your team about how to, okay, this is how we need to approach this situation, right? Give a manager the feedback, right? If you don't want to deal with the team member and give them the feedback necessarily, and because you don't want to demotivate them in some way, because you think that you're going to have a cultural difference and the way you deliver it is not going to be the right way, then you've got resources to go to give that feedback directly that won't take it personally, but will put it across to their team and make sure they put a process in place to, again, overcome those challenges, right? In a lot of cases. Now, and you mentioned you typically put a senior in there deliberately for that reason, that they can handle the feedback as well constructively, right? So, I mean, again, great way to do it. And again, I think it's a great point, because it happens all too much that I see that people treat it as a failure before really even giving feedback and training and things like that, where they would do internally, right? They would sit with them and they'd say, this is how you do it, right? So so tell us as we wrap up, one of the a differentiator, that what separates you from and Windy Street from other outsourcing firms in India from that perspective, and then just give your details, how people can reach you as well, so that we can and then we'll wrap up.
Sure. So what makes us different, Lawrence, is that we have experience in the offshoring space, but our experience is not only limited doing offshoring from India. A lot of the team members we have done offshoring from the US to India. So we've been actually users of offshoring. I've been a senior manager at a Big Four and have sent thousands of hours of work to India as a user myself. There are a lot of other team members, like, for example, Raghav's been a user from the Cayman Islands to India and has sent multiple audit projects to India. He's leading our audit practice right now. So a lot of people at Windy Street have been actual users of offshoring. So therefore, we understand what the pain points are, and we've tried to sit down and say, okay, these are all the pain points. Now, how do we solve these problems and try to build the firm in that way? So that is one of the biggest differentiators of Windy Street. And then we've already talked about communication. So we built, you know, a very robust process in how we communicate with the US team. As an example, what we do is we have a standing call on the calendar for about 10 or 11 Eastern time, or let's say 9 Pacific time, which is about, you know, let's say 8:30, 9 p.m. for India. It is a standing call on the calendar. Every day you may or may not need the call, but it is there on the calendar. Because of which, what happens is the US team member and the India team member don't have to ping each other. What time do we talk now? They have a standing call. Sometimes they cancel the call if there's nothing to talk about, or jump on the call, just chat about something, you know, which is not related to work, and then hang up after 10 minutes. But if there is important stuff to discuss, they can share their screen, tell the team members, okay, this is what I've accomplished, these are the questions I have, this is what I plan to do tomorrow. And that way, the communication becomes much better. And I would say customized best practices, because each firm is different. In fact, even in a firm, every team is different. The audit team might be doing things differently than the tax team. So you have to customize the way you operate in terms of all the best practices to make this work. And you have to talk to the partners. How do you do things? Is your team structured by pod? Is it structured by sector? So those kind of things we have to understand before giving a solution. We can't give a solution that will fit everybody. So I think what we do is tailor solutions and provide white glove services to clients. So those are the things that we do differently. And knock on wood, we've never lost a client in the 3 years that we've been in operations. And we've, as I mentioned, our employee attrition is about 10% on a gross basis. So we've been, doing well so far, and hopefully this continues.
Now tell everybody how to reach you.
So our website is thewindystreet.com. And so if you go to the website, you'll find myself, and you can also reach me at bhavesh@windystreet.in. This is spelled as bhavesh@windystreet.in. So that's how you can reach us. And then obviously we are also available on LinkedIn. So if you send us a message, we'll be responsive enough.
Yeah, and we'll definitely post that information as well, so that everybody can get it in the podcast section. So now, Bhavesh, no, appreciate the time. Appreciate you sharing all about your driving antics and what you guys are doing as a firm. So that's great to hear. I think that's a very, very important last piece that you mentioned, just that every firm is different, right, to some aspect, right? There are general things that they should be following from a best practice perspective, but different things are important to different firms, right, and need to work on differently. But also within a firm, right, there's the different practices a lot of the times, even just different partners, right, when they're running their teams, run and act differently, right, at the end of the day. So, and I've seen it where more and more firms now are using multiple vendors from the outsourcing perspective as well. But, and again, sometimes you need to do that. You need to go to a different location. It could be India, it could be the Philippines, South Africa, South America, but it could be with one provider, right? As long as they're adaptable and they're being open to change as well. Like, some firms are more specific as to what they want to do. Others are more flexible from that model perspective. So it's not necessarily you have to look somewhere else, but it is good to have that understanding that internally in your firm, you may actually have different needs than necessarily just one partner who's just started doing it is doing it really well. That doesn't mean the next partner or the next group is going to be exactly the same situation. So great last point. And if anybody wants to reach Bhavesh, we'll have the details. And again, I appreciate everybody joining today. I hope you had a lot of valuable information. And we look forward to seeing you on the next episode of Business Beyond Borders. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Lauren.
Thank you for tuning in to Business Beyond Borders. I'm Lawrence Whittam, and it's been a pleasure bringing you impactful insights tailored for the modern CPA firm. Remember, the world of accounting is vast and ever-evolving, and we're here to navigate it together. For more resources and episodes, don't forget to subscribe and reach out to our experts. Until next time, keep pushing the boundaries of your business and explore the limitless possibilities beyond borders.